Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of What's on Draft. I am back this week. My name is Mark Whittington, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts Cole Zwicker and Javier Pesquera. And we're excited for another week of or another podcast of chatting it up. We're going to sort of cover some guys that we found intriguing over the last couple of weeks as this draft class has come into sharper and sharper focus. But I think as it's been doing so, it's simultaneously been becoming a little more difficult to figure out one of the sort of bigger burgeoning tiers of players after the top guys. So we're going to try to delve into that a little bit, try to make sense of what we're all seeing. So that's sort of the plan for today, and we're going to go whichever way the wind blows. So how are you guys doing?
Well, we're here. I will say that this is always great to get around, just to get my thoughts out there and kind of get a bit more clarity, because we are talking about this difficult tier after the top one or the top two ones, wherever you want to slice it. And it's always good, right, to just talk it through and get a better understanding of how the guys stack up and which names are there to be up in the discussion. I think it's always an opportunity to clear your thoughts around the matter and get a better idea of what you want, what you like, and which guys you think belong in the conversation. And we are going to try to sort that out today, I will say.
Yeah, doing good here. Just crammed down some coffee. It's good to have Mark back, because I actually forgot to introduce myself as the host last week. So that was really good, a first impression there. Yeah. So happy to be back at it.
That must have ruined the podcast. Cool. Let's get into it. You guys want to start with thoughts on Tatum or Isaac, or the Tatum Isaac matchup, or what do you guys?
Yeah, think? I think that the matchup didn't really deliver all that much for me in terms of how much they stagger against each other, especially the last one, the one in March 1st. I think it was at Duke at Cameron. I think it was more about like what you take about them isolatedly, right? Like it's just about what they have as the skill set and what they bring to the table. Like immediately, I think for Isaac, you could see how much he brings to the table in terms of like chasing balls around the court defensively. Like he's always focused on where the ball is at, and like he kind of get his spots there, and he'd really get around and get across people to try to get those offensive boards and try to block the ball at the rim. I think that's the main thought I got from him, like physicality, and he's a guy that really battles around the court. And for Tatum, it was more about like when he gets to his spots, and he kind of delivered a bit more late in the game. Like his first half was a bit sloppy, but he was okay moving the ball around. And I think we talk about this, like he's a guy that you can't really completely talk about as a non-creator, because he shows instincts and he shows ability, even passing on the move a couple times. I think he's more of a ball mover than a stopper. And that's always encouraging. So that was my main takeaways earlier on from the game. And I think Tatum delivered a little bit later on the game, whereas Isaac disappeared a little bit after. Like he scored seven points really, really fast earlier on. And I think that was mainly my take out of it. I don't know where you guys stand, but I think they were separated quite easily earlier on from their skills perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a pretty in-depth breakdown for the step back about the matchup individually that touched on the previous matchup as well. But I feel like it just kind of highlighted what we had talked about before the matchup even started, which is basically Isaac has a lower ceiling creation-wise. And that was pretty evident in that game. I thought Isaac, his D was really good. I thought for the most part, positionally, it's gotten a lot better. But when you talk about self-creation ceiling, you know, Tatum really showcased that, you know, the short area quickness, the triple threat kind of shake there. And for me, archetype-wise, Isaac kind of tops out at probably like a 3-and-D plus kind of guy. Like he can put the ball on the floor a little bit and he can dribble. Like he had a grab and go in that game. It was really impressive. And he pulled up. He missed it, of course, but it was a good grab and go take. But that's really where he tops out. And I think that we have to give Tatum that kind of category two that I call it primary scoring equity, at least for a ceiling outcome. I'm not sure if he's going to get there. He still has, you know, massive problems. If you look at his synergy stats, he's 40 of 76 finishing around the basket, which is the 50th percentile. Not great for his size at all. 2 of 12 on runners. And he had two really nice finishes in that game, but that still really hasn't like overcompensated for the fact that during the season, that's been a huge issue for him. But overall, I think the main takeaway for me is delineating between the ceiling outcomes for those two players, with Isaac having a really safe kind of 3 and D floor with a little bit of handle, whereas Tatum actually has maybe primary scoring upside.
Yeah, for me, I kind of have to keep reminding myself this at the beginning of the at the top of the draft. But the top of the draft is really all about those top end tail outcomes, right? So, like, I think there's a pretty reasonable chance that, I mean, both players are going to be useful 3 and D guys. I think there's a pretty reasonable chance that Isaac is the better overall player eventually than Tatum. But if I'm picking in that 1 to 5 range, 1 to 6 range where both of these guys are likely to go, I'm picking for what their absolute tail outcome might be. And like, Jason Tatum's going to have to make some really big improvements as a finisher and as a passer to sort of tap into what his top end outcome could be, but it's there. And it is more of a realistic possibility for him to become sort of that number two guy on a championship team, that as you call them, category two type of playmaking wing, than it is for Isaac, for whom I think it's almost an impossibility at this point. And that likelihood is enough that I, at this point, am like decidedly moving towards Tatum over.
Yeah, I think we all are, right? I think for Tatum, it's not only that his ceiling is higher. I think his floor, even though it could be a bit lower than Isaac probably, is still high enough that you're not going to have a problem there. It's not like a debate between Lonzo Ball and Dennis Smith Jr. where you can think about being a difficulty to build a team around or with Smith on board if he doesn't pan out. It's just like Tatum is kind of a guy that you can probably fit in most scenarios just because of the positional versatility and how much he can bring to the table in terms of shooting the ball from the mid-range and creating his own shot and against certain units. And I think he's a guy that can move the ball a little bit, even if he doesn't get to the point that he can create on the move. And that's enough that the ball doesn't stick on his hands and doesn't create a problem offensively for your team. So I think that's a big point and a big deal breaker for me in terms of having Tatum clearly ahead of Isaac. It's just like, even if the situation doesn't pan out for him to become that secondary creator, secondary scorer for your team, I think he's going to bring enough that the floor is not completely below what Isaac is going to bring, even if he could be better down the road, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, this game just further illuminated. Isaac is mostly an off-ball player right now.
Yeah.
Like, he makes impacts, offensive rebounding on putbacks, spot-up shooting, being an instinctual cutter, situational handling. For the most part, you saw his limitations. There's at the 12-19 mark of the first half, he kind of comes off a pin-down screen and Tatum's like chasing him off of it. Kind of jab steps and try to create separation, but he can't even separate it all from Tatum. Like, he just doesn't have – the ball slows him down so much. And
yeah, he can never really separate from anyone.
Couldn't
really
even separate from Emile Jefferson on a switch in that game. Like, there's been a lot of different episodes of that this season. And it's just – it definitely casts like a graver light on his creation upside, even if he does play the four.
Yeah, he doesn't have that much pop either around the basket. Like, he's a guy that can get up and has a long enough arms to just – be a terror on the offensive glass. But if you watch him, he's not like an athletic freak that is going to just out jump people or be a lob target either way of ball. I think he's a good cutter and he moves well off ball. He really reads the court well and reads where the ball is going and where his defender is doing and all that. But I don't think he has like that untapped athleticism. Even if he gets stronger in terms of frame, I don't really know if he got, like, people were comparing him that way with like the evolution of Giannis in terms of physically, how much athletic he got as he got stronger. I don't really know if he has that in terms of popping and elevation either.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me, what helps with him is that he's a really good rebounder and he can protect the rim some.
Yeah,
and like,
for sure.
That's where the differentiation between the two comes. I think that Tatum is primarily a three who can swing to the four in certain matchups, which is kind of what I feel about Josh Jackson the same way. And I feel like Isaac eventually could probably start at the four. It might be 2 years from now. It might be 3 years from now once he adds some more weight. But ultimately, I think that he can be a super versatile combo forward type who can really bring like two level significance to defense. And there just aren't a lot of guys like that who can shoot the three, like put the ball on the floor a little bit. So I still think he's really valuable. I think we all do. Like, we have him top six still. It's just like Tatum recently has just been on a complete tear. Well, I shouldn't say complete tear. It's been on and off. Like, last night he was pretty bad.
Well,
he missed four layups last night in the UNC game. He was 0 for 7 from 3 against Miami. But, like, we've seen more of the flashes.
I mean, the big thing with Tatum was that he was, like, really, really due to progress to his shooting mean. And he sort of did that all at once in that, like, five-game stretch where he couldn't miss. And what do you know? When people are making their three-point shots, they look like much better players.
Yeah, I mean, this game was an example of that, right? Like, the first half was completely, like, sloppiness and really turnover prone everywhere on the floor. And, like, you didn't really see... That's a point I have with Tatum. Like, unless he's involved in a pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop situation, or he gets the ball on the side or anything like that, he doesn't really do as much as you will see with Isaac off ball. Like, that's something of his offensive game I think he could work on and develop. And also his shooting ability. Like, I know he's been on a tear and he's been much better in terms of, like, accuracy and all that. I don't like his release all that much. I know he like, gets, like, a very compact form and, like, I mean, his elbow goes a bit off and all that, but, like, I think he tends to, like, release the ball a bit early. I don't know what you think, guys, about, like, how much of a translating jumper he has to the next level. I think he probably will get there eventually, but I have my doubts in terms of, like, he's going to be able to use pull-up from three at a high level, the next level, because that would be a much needy weapon for him, with his lack of explosiveness.
Yeah, I think he's a bit mechanical at the top of his release. Yeah. I think, like, I don't think it looks like super fluid. But the thing with him is, like, he has shot pretty well off the dribble of late. Like, he's progressed there. I think he's now 22 of 60 off the dribble in the half court, which is not bad at all. And some of those are definitely threes. Like, he can use that hang dribble to kind of freeze guys and then pull up. But I agree. I mean, he's not like a lock in to be like a dynamic off the dribble shooting threat from three. But I definitely think he has the capability to do so. He definitely has the strength.
Yep.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. To withstand constant content. That's for sure. Yeah. Even penetrating, I think that's part of it. Like, he doesn't elevate all that well and all that, but, like, he does have a strength to finish sometimes. Like, has some creative finishes around the basket sometimes. Like, you could see him extending and things like that you don't really see with Isaac, even if he has plus length compared to Tatum. But, like, I think that's good. He has a good balance, even if he doesn't elevate well. He's a guy that you see that has, like, that type of, like, strong upper body and the chest to be able to battle people inside and take some contact. He's just, like, he's underwhelming in terms of his ability to jump off 1 foot. And you guys talk about this when you covered the wings. Like, people were talking about the dunk over Kennedy Mix, and, like, when I watched it, I was really, like, completely blown out by how people were really exacerbating the impressiveness of the play. Like, even people were talking about Kennedy Mix being a 6'10", 6'11 guy when he's about 6'9". I don't know if it's a narrative out there to be talking up Tatum's ability to explode, but, like, that was quite lame, I would say. But yeah, that's part of it. Like, I don't know if we should switch towards defensive ability for both those guys, because I was kind of impressed with Isaac again. Like, I think he does really well on the perimeter and he has that ability to rotate around the basket. I think my main takeaway with him is I don't really trust him all that much backpedaling or going to in terms of containing penetration. Like, he does get a good stance, but, like, he gets beaten off his spots quite easily. Like, at least he got by Tatum sometimes, and I think he does by guards also. Like, he's really, really long and he gets down a fair amount and does that well. But, like, I think he has that type of issue that you will see sometimes. He's also with Nili Kina, that when he's moving laterally and he has to contain penetration by a guy that has that elite first step, like, they get blown by quite often, I would say. Like, that's something that troubles me a little bit.
What do you think, Mark?
I'm not sure who we're talking about anymore at this point.
Isaac, like, as far as, do you have any concerns about him moving laterally or in space, like, retreating?
I mean, no.
I'm kind of with you. I remember you, like, you pointed this out in one of your pieces. I don't want to misquote you, but I'm pretty sure you said that he had really active feet. He was light in his feet all the time. And that's something that I've noticed too. Like, he really is active that way.
Yeah, he's got fantastic feet. I mean, basically, I think this. I think, like, he's going to get beaten off the dribble sometimes by, like, super, super quick guys. And, like, that's the thing. But I think that's the case for almost any, like, four who's being asked to contain those guys. And I think he's about as good as you can expect out of players at that position. So, like, I don't think like what you're saying is invalid scouting, Javier. I'm not sure that it's actually concerning because I've like, to me, he is very good at it for what he needs to do, and for what he's going to be asked to do. And like most guys don't beat him off the dribble, and it shows up in like when you watch him by the eye, and it shows up very much so in his stats as well, where he like has a huge impact on Florida State's offense, or Florida State's defense rather. And he has great on-off stats, and he's going to be a good defender. He's going to be a good defender, and like that's the bottom line to me.
I guess what I've noticed is his positioning. Even if you just compare both games against Duke, like the first game, Tatum beat him off the dribble, I think 3 or 4 times, and his positioning was just bad. He tried to overextend, play too far out. His positioning was bad. He like allowed Tatum to go middle in ice coverage and stuff like that. And I think he's just improved a lot there. So his positional defense is probably not going to be great coming into the league, but over time, I think he can refine that.
Yeah, and I mean, another thing is like, everyone's bad when they get into the league, right? Like, as far as like immediate expectations on these guys, like they may be good defenders for a rookie, but like they'll probably still be bad defenders. But you're never drafting someone for what they're going to do in their first year, in their rookie year, their second or third year, because the expectation is that players are bad during those years. You're drafting them for 4 years from now, when they're reaching their peak as players athletically, and when they've adjusted to the league and the speed and the size and the athleticism, and they like know how to, their brain is functioning on the level to work with their athleticism in concert. So, like, I think there may be concerns about how Isaac is at the beginning when he like defensively or offensively or both, but I think in a couple of years he's going to be fine, and that's, you know, that's really what matters, not rookie year, but seasons 4 through 8.
No, man, absolutely, and he too, he's like complete for him. Like, he doesn't show any fear of mixing it up or like battling guys, even if he doesn't have the right frame to do it. Like, I think he does a big takeaway for him, like he does battle inside and he does take those things seriously, and he does even like to front guys or like try to get into in a space. Like, I think that's important to showcase with him, because that's part of what makes him be viable at the four, right? Like, that's one thing that we were talking about with these guys. Like, we talked about the bigs last week and we didn't include him, but you can include him as a big, even if he's not the proper prospect in terms of being a pure big, because he might have a venue later in his career being more useful as a five even than as a three, right? Like, if he improves physically enough and he changes his physique, I think that's a possibility down the road, and that's because he brings it to the table in terms of rebounds and in terms of like bringing enough of the big man things to be able to cover that type of role.
Yeah, I mean, you could see his toughness in that game, trying to prevent Tatum from catching on his spots. Like, he'd front him, he'd really fight him the entire time. And the only reason he'd lose eventually is because Tatum had the better frame and would just run through him in certain points. But he does big man things. Like, he does fight down low. He does, you know, fight for position. He protect the rim. He can rebound. It's just really right now what's holding him up is the frame limitations. Like, that's where he gets dislodged when Tatum like runs through him. And that stuff that's going to, you know, that's like Brandon Ingram stuff. Like, you're going to have that go on. You're going to be in limbo for a little bit, but you're just looking long term and seeing that projectable like 3D+ upside and the versatility. So, I mean, I don't know, like, for you guys, so we're all on board with probably Tatum over Isaac at this point, just for the ceiling outcome, right?
Yeah, I am.
I think at this point, like, Tatum's shown too much creation-wise over the last couple of weeks to really deny that.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
So why don't we transition into like who we have seventh? If we can recap, obviously we have Fultz 1, Jackson 2, Ball 3, Tatum 4, Dennis Smith 5, and then Isaac 6 in some order, with Fultz probably 1 for all of us. So like what we've been talking about on air for everybody that's listening is like we're kind of hamstrung after that. Like we don't really know. There's like a big group of guys that could potentially be there. A Miles Bridges, a Mykal Bridges. For me, Malik Monk. And then, of course, Frank Ntilikina, who's probably the favorite there at this point. Javier, why don't you start? Where are you leaning right now at seven?
I think I was leaning Ntilikina for a while, and I actually threw out a big board for the top 15 that I feel more or less comfortable with the other day before I left for the weekend. And I think I'm switching a little bit towards Miles Bridges. Like, I know it's between those two for me. It's just like, I think ceiling-wise, they are the guys that have the highest one out there of the rest available players, probably. But, like, also, I think the outcome, the median outcome for them is fairly reasonable in terms of like not having a low enough floor to make me discard them. I think with Ntilikina, it's just like so difficult to come up with the right read, right? It's true that his numbers have been going down, but it's also like he's playing this weird Hebrew role for his team. Like they had started with the playoffs of the Champions League in Europe with Strasbourg. They played Aris the other day, and I was the game, and like, he was playing off the bench, playing mainly as a wing. And at least he's a guy that is not making mistakes. He's not losing the ball. He's still polite defensively. He's enough to contribute to this level of professionalism basketball. But it's just difficult to see him because he doesn't really get the ball a lot. And he's not a guy that is going to be tremendous off ball, even if his ability to shoot it has been better than I expected. But it's just difficult to get a read with him. It's more about trying to trust his possible improvement in terms of like whenever he gets stronger, being the youngest player of the draft, I would say, or at least he's on the top two in that regard. He's like 18.7 years old, something like that. And I think if you are more or less trusting a little bit of improvement in terms of explosiveness and a little bit of improvement in terms of reading out of the pick and roll, which is the main takeaway with him, I think he's not all that advanced there. But you have to remember like guys like Damian Lillard that got 4 years to basically practice that and practice professional settings all day, every day at Weber State. Like they were getting as freshmen to campus when they were the age in Ntilikina is now. Like they're probably in high school still at that time. So it's just, you have to take that into account. You have to probably read a little bit too much into the future for what I like in terms of projecting guys. I think the upside is still there with him, and I think the floor is good enough that you can probably take him and put him in the discussion just because the shooting looks real and the length and the defensive prowess is obviously there. We all see that. And with Bridges, it's more about, like for me, I was a bit scared of him not being able to hit the three enough to be able to be a creator from his spots. But like I have liked his form more and more, and I think he's showing improvement in terms of reading out of the pick and roll, reading out of making passes fast. And defensively, like, we'll talk about like he's not perfect in terms of like staying concentrated and all that all game long, but like he shows enough in terms of like rebounding like a big, enough in terms of like even some explosiveness around the rim to be able to protect the basket sometimes, to be able to play the four more times than not, and that's the main thing with him, to be able to play offensively at the next level. So I think it's between those guys for me.
What about you, Mark?
I don't know, man. I'm at the point where I'm very scared by Ntilikina. I don't have a lot of faith in him anymore. The selling point at the beginning of the season was that he looked like if the pick and roll ability never developed, he looked like he could be an efficient enough scorer off the ball and a strong enough defender on ball that he would still bring value. And he had that great performance in the U18s that was really, really encouraging as far as shooting and shooting off the dribble and shooting generally. And then I sort of tuned out from him for a while. And in the meantime, his efficiency has gone in the absolute tank. His 3-point percentage regressed back to what his normal mean was before those couple of months of hot shooting. And if he's not going to shoot and the finishing problems are real and the pick and roll penetration problems are real and his defense is good but not sort of top five point guard defender in the league, then you're looking at someone who could very easily have almost no value, which is a like pretty reasonable outcome for me to see now, and something that really scares me off. And he doesn't present enough of an upside to where I'm convinced that the risks that he presents outweigh, or the positives outweigh the risks. So I'm pretty scared with Frank, and part of it is that I'm definitely not good with European prospects. I don't watch them as well as frequently. I struggle to understand how their roles will translate given what their roles are on their teams. I would say I've probably missed the most on Euros the last couple of years. I don't want to commit too much to anything as far as he's concerned, but I'm definitely worried there. I guess that's to talk me off the ledge with Frank, basically. Why should I be more optimistic than I am at the moment?
I mean, his percentage is... Yeah, sorry. I mean, his percentage is...
No. You see more than so you can
his
proceed.
His percentage took a deep, but like, he's been good in the last... I mean, I haven't watched all of them. I only watched the game against Aris. But like, he's been, like, I think, seven out of 10 in the last three games from three. I think he's just an inconsistent shooter so far. And you can take a look at his games. Like, he's just getting the ball... Most of the times, in terms of ball situations, he's not a guy that is getting to run the offense all that much. Like, I used to hate watching Irving Walker at Florida when I was trying to scout Bradley Beal in his last year as senior there. And he's the point guard for Strasbourg. The de facto point guard starter there, a miniature guy, and is basically a scorer. And it's just like difficult to kind of get a read on Frank. I would say, like, I think his defense is still really polished for his age. Like, that's part of it. Like, that's part of where I think his floor. It's high enough for me to be comfortable with this. But it's true that, like, we were talking about that with Isaac, and I think it matters more with Ntilikina. Like, even if you are really good at this, and it happens to Josh Jackson, especially because he presses a bit too much sometimes, like, you're going to get beaten down sometimes off the dribble and getting... because there are guys that are just way too athletic and way too fast to cover. And I think, like, point guard defense in the end is just going to be not as valuable as you want from a guy if he's not able to do much more offensively. It's just that you don't get to see what he can do offensively. That's part of it. Like, just up in the air. Like, if you like enough what you saw from the European Championship out in Turkey when he played in December, November, etc. I think he saw, like, the pull-up jumper was something I was not expecting there, and like, he saw ability there and confident. Was confident enough on that, and that's why where I put him over the top and why I keep him there. But you just the creation and all that, like, I think he's polished enough and poised enough to be able to run an offense. He's just, like, probably lacking creativity to sustain those type of high usages. But it's also, like I said, like, he's going to turn 19 just 6 days after the draft. So that's part of it as well. Like, he doesn't have that much experience running the pick and roll. That's part of the deal here.
Yeah, conceptually, I just like what he could be, the 3-and-D plus kind of lead guard. I never really saw him as, like, a primary initiator. Like, you're just going to hand over all the playmaking
sure,
to him.
Yeah.
But like Mark said, I mean, if the threes and the D isn't there, then we have a serious problem. If either one of those aren't there. So for me, I just have to watch more of him. I've seen two full games, and he was really impressive. Like Javier noted with the pull-up jumpers. That's something I did not expect. He was really confident taking them. He hit them in a degree of ways. He was hitting threes off that scheme-changing shot. So... he showed enough there for me to be interested, but pretty much after the college season, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and watch every single minute of him that I can possibly acquire and then formulate an opinion, because the lack of burst, the lack of acceleration and all the finishing stuff, like, he's a really raw finisher and all that stuff is real. That was obvious on tape. It was just what was compensating for that was the pull-up jumpers and the spot-up shooting. And if, like, But conceptually, he could be like a superstar role player. Like, he could be that 3 and D kind of like George Hill type conceptually. So there's intrigue for me still. And right now I have him 7 just until somebody else beats him out, or basically until he beats himself out. So for now, I'm going to operate with, you know, him there. And then it's going to be between Bridges and Monk for me.
Whoa,
after that.
Monk that high. Yeah.
I'm in on Monk, dude. Like, yeah. I'm buying. I mean, watch the second half of Florida. It's just the whole repertoire was on it, man. He was putting pressure on the basket, like legit first step, blow bys. The passing was there. They're mostly premeditated stuff, but he can hit the dive, man. He has some vision. And then, you know, he was operating a pick and roll. He had a pick and roll rejection. This is like the one time I'm ever going to buy in on somebody like this, just because the main thing is like the off-screen shooting and like the diversity of shooting. Like, he can get so ridiculously hot. But it's like all the time he's a threat from every single area of the court as far as shooting. Like, he can shoot going either direction off the dribble, either way off screens. He's really fast. And like, as an initial set in an offense, like, that's just like what the Clippers do. They run JJ Redick off screens, and then they go into their secondary action with like Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, or Chris Paul, DJ, pick and roll. And like, that can be a tremendous asset. We've seen that with Kyle Korver in the past. And I know those guys have to bring like legit all time shooting. But like, when I look at Monk, that's kind of what I see. I didn't see that with Hield. I didn't see that with Murray. I just see the total package there.
Yeah, I don't know which guy you have marked there, or which guy you are advocating for. If he's not,
I don't know. I have no idea who I have.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I guess I lean towards Miles Bridges at this point. But
yeah,
like, I am so utterly confused with what to do at this point in the draft that like. I need to remind myself that generally when you get past six players, or like when you get past like the top six players from any given draft, once you're looking back at them back in time, like 10 years later or something, like, there probably aren't very many useful players, if any at all, at that point, unless it's a very, very deep draft. So, I need to remind myself that it's not unreasonable for this to be like where a significant drop off point might be. But
and we talk about this with Cole. I think I talked about this with Cole the other day in Twitter and all that. Like, this could be a really like interesting draft in the top six and like really deep there in terms of talent and all that, especially coming from last year. But if we are talking about depth overall, like, this could be a really shallow draft. I know people are talking about it being historically good and all that, but like, it just, like, I have like 15 guys I'm comfortable with, more or less, but like, I think at least 3 or 4 of those probably won't declare. And then if you add the next reasonable guys that you can have for the top 30 or even top 40, I think half those guys might not declare. So like, if like 70% of the guys that I have projected as coming back to school or even not going in internationally do stay put, like, you can have like a really, really solid depth in terms of even the first round overall. So that's a bit concerning if you are not even comfortable with like more than 6-7 guys for the top 15, I would say. Like, that's part of the analysis here that we are not touching that much, but like, reading into people talking about the draft and talking it up and even in the mass media, I think that's a very fair point to make out as well here.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the draft goes, you know, 15, 16, 17 deep in terms of players that I'm interested in. I'm just not sure, like, which one of those guys is reasonable to expect to take that top portion of that before that drop off. And I do think, like, part of the disconnect between how we view the depth of the draft and how mainstream discussion and consensus views the draft is, in part, that we tend to be lower on a lot of these guys based on history, but also that we are lower on specific guys that like De'Aaron Fox and Lauri Markkanen and some others as well in that general area. Generally Malik Monk, although apparently Cole has him right around there. I am also higher on Monk than those two other guys.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, those are the types of guys who, once you start to discount them as being inherently very valuable to this draft, the actual, like, overall depth and the overall quality drops quite a bit, because I think a lot of people are putting a lot of stock into those couple guys being very, very good players.
Allergies, pollen in the air, Dogs in the house. Mold in the basement. Whatever triggers your allergy symptoms, it can really hold you back. Break through with Allegra 5-in-1 Relief. Allegra works fast, won't make you drowsy, provides 24-hour multi-symptom relief, and it's effective every day. Break through allergies with Allegra. Starts working in 1 hour, use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
Yeah, the discussion could come down to both bridges, right, for that seventh spot. Like, we haven't talked about Mikal that much, but like, he's a guy that you won't be also that surprised if he ends up being a top seven player out of this class.
Not at all. I mean, he fits like the two-way wing archetype, and those guys are ridiculously valuable. Jonathan Jarch just wrote a piece about Villanova, the two guys there, and it seems like people are forgetting about those guys. And we have people like Justin Patton in the lottery. We have Ivan Rabb still in the lottery for some people. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, that guy should not even be in the first round right now, probably, unless, well, depending on who declares. But like, you touched on the key, Javier, as far as like, this draft is going to turn on how many of those two-way wing guys declare, because you lose depth real quick. Like, this thing could dive off after even the top nine picks. If, like, I mean, I guess then Lauri Markkanen becomes like a viable option for me at like around 14 or so, because I see him as like a situational shooter that can bring value. Like, I think he's going to be on an NBA roster and be valuable. I just don't want to draft him in the top 10 if I don't want to have him start for my team. So, but if it's really shallow, I mean, those guys, even De'Aaron Fox, like, you take a chance on the shooting at that point.
Yeah, in the top 20 at least, right? Like, that's the thing. Yeah, like, it's not pretty.
I don't want to, but
it gets ugly really fast. It gets ugly really fast. Like, I'm that close to two guys or three guys coming back to school to have Donovan Mitchell, who I like, as a top 10 pick. And I think people that are talking about this draft in terms of being super deep and being like a high quality draft in terms of the stars, I'm not really taking all that into account. It's just like, it depends on how high you get into in terms of getting those guys like Markkanen and Fox that you were talking about, Cole, as viable top 10 candidates. But like, I'm not there, and if you are not there with those guys, it gets really, really shallow fast.
I want to quickly return to Mikal, because I think he's a really important guy to talk about. He's someone who is starting to get some more starting to get some more general buzz, I think, like, some beyond just sort of our niche community, people are starting to recognize him a little more as a viable draft guy. Although I may just be too tapped into our community to be able to tell the difference at this point, who knows. but I want to talk about him because I think that I feel almost a little ridiculous saying this, but I think he has a real argument to be a top 10 guy and maybe even like 7 or 8. And the reason why, like, is because I don't think people give him enough credit for how outstanding of a defender he is. I want to talk quickly about OG Anunoby, who we haven't talked about in ages on this pod, and who most people haven't been talking about for a little bit after, since his I don't remember if it was ACL or MCL injury, but since his knee injury. He's sort of been out of sight, out of mind. But 2 months ago, we all had OG Anunoby in the top 9. So solidly in our top 9 guys for this draft, like, OG is one of them. And that was based almost entirely on the strength of his defense and how elite of a perimeter defender he was, who could switch between guarding potentially all 5 positions and brought rim protection and brought weak side rim protection, not like solid real rim protection, and brought switching ability and could pick pockets and could pressure. And he's a complete zero on offense. But because his defense was so strong, we thought he was plausible as a top 10 guy on the basis of, if he can only get a passable 3-point shot, he'll be very, very valuable. So if that's our thinking for OG Anunoby, I feel like Mikal Bridges has to be in this conversation, because he's not the same caliber of defender as OG is, but he's probably 85 to 90% of the same guy. And that, like, there's very little that separates them there. McCall has been, for 2 years straight now, just an elite pressure guy. He's got, Cole was talking about Jonathan Isaac's feet and like how light he is on his feet and how quick he is and how twitchy. Like McCall Bridges has the exact same thing where anytime you watch him on defense and you like really zero in, like his feet stand out to me, how quick they are. And it's like, I really enjoy watching that about him. He is the best defender on a Villanova team that is the defending champion and like one of the favorites for the national title this year. And he's basically like their only like clearly above average defender. So I think there's a real argument to be made that, I mean, he's definitely a top three defender in the class, perimeter defender in the class, with Josh Jackson and OG Anunoby. And they're like, you could make the argument that he's one or two. He could be ahead of Josh Jackson, depending on how you see it. And I don't think he's ahead of Anunoby, but he's really, really close. So I think if he's bringing 90% of the value there, you then look at his three-point shot because you know that he's going to bring a lot on the defensive end. And let's see if I can – I'm going to pull up his sports reference right now. He's shooting 40.6% on the year on 101 attempts. He's shooting 36% from three over his Villanova career. And he's shooting 90% from the free throw line and 83% overall from his last 2 years. So to me, that says like, he's way more likely than OG Anunoby is to shoot. And then you even start to consider like, how is the rest of his offensive game? Well, he never turns the ball over. He's not a creator, but he's an intuitive passer who, for 2 years now has had a very impressive assist percentage given how low his usage is and given how little he touches the ball. And then you think, okay, he probably doesn't have much potential as a slasher, but you look at it, how he finishes, and he's shooting like 80% at the rim, and he finishes with both hands, and he plays above the rim. And I see all this, and I think, well, he's never going to be your primary, secondary, or even maybe tertiary guy on the offensive end. But as a 3-and-D wing who actually is going to shoot and like clearly is a plus on defense, and has some ability to attack closeouts and finish really effectively around the rim, I'm not sure why he's not a top 10 guy and like potentially 7, 8, or 9 in this draft.
He's probably the most plug and play ready guy in terms of like role players in this class, I would say. Like, he's a guy that you can imagine playing at a high level in a competitive team, not right away because he's going to be a rookie, but like fast enough that he's going to bring value in his rookie contract, right? And that's part of it as well. And like you will say, like, I was checking his hoop math numbers right now, and like, he's at 83% at the rim and like only 40% assisted at the rim, which, I mean, is pretty much a good number for a perimeter guy. Like, Josh Hart is at 45%. And like, his two-point jumpers are not all that good, but like, they are not assisted as well. So he's pulling up sometimes. I think he's a guy
pretty much a perfect like experiment of like if you wanted to project how someone's numbers would change from the NCAA to the NBA if you don't change his role at all, because all of his shots at the rim are like similarly attacking closeouts, and like he doesn't like maybe two times a game, but every time he does, he converts. And like, he does it on his own. It's not assisted, as you were saying. Cole, I want to get you in here quickly. Like, what are your thoughts? Like, am I wrong? Am I overly optimistic? Should I be more worried about the usage and about, his not having shown more? Like, what do you think here?
No, I think you guys are spot on. I haven't really let myself get there just because I don't think he's going to declare. So I haven't really been considering him in like the 7 to 10 range. But you guys, like, the methodology behind it is absolutely spot on. Like, this is the kind of guy that you want on your team. I have issues, I guess, with his assertiveness. I know he's like, he's way down the totem pole as far as Villanova guys and like creation and all that stuff, but there are times where I'd like to see him step up and generate offense when he actually has the chance to do so. But he can actually put the ball on the floor. He's coherent as a handler, which OG is not. Like, OG's way more explosive, I think, at the rim. Like, OG can really get up off of one. And McCall is more of like, he's great touch. And he's like over 80%, like you guys said, at the rim, which is great. But it's the coherentness as far as handling. He can pass and make easy reads. Like, he just fits that 3-and-D role really well in the right setting. It's just like, are you going to get a coach that like instills confidence in this guy? He can actually go out on the floor and give you minutes early in his career.
Yeah, but that's part of the good thing about him right now in terms of like being able to plug and play, because he's not going to make mistakes or like play outside of his role, right? Like, that's part of the attractiveness of it. It's just how much are you willing to sell low theoretically if he doesn't come anything more than that, right? Like, just for me, he brings enough to the table. Even if he doesn't improve, I mean, he has to improve to play at the next level. Everyone does, but like, if he doesn't get outside of this role, I think it's enough for a top 10, top 12 pick for sure. It's just like with OJ, I think he's a bit more robotic, whereas Mikal is more fluid. It's just like OJ brings this type of unreal strength level that I don't think Mikal is ever going to get there, and he has better balance. Like, it's a different type of animal athletically, but it's just like in terms of like creativity, I think Mikal is a bit ahead as well, even if he hasn't showcased all that much on ball. But like Cole was saying, like, he's one of those guys that I have top 10, top 12 for sure, that he's probably going to come back. So hopefully you will see that next year, Cole, like, at Villanova without Hart. And I mean, Branson will still be there, but like Jenkins is going to be a senior as well. So I don't know if we'll see him getting to that level without Hart there, but like, at least I'm kind of for sure thinking that he will come back for next year.
Yeah, you know, I think that's probably the right move. But I mean, like, it comes down to a test case. Like, role players in college, do they translate to a role in the NBA? Like, if I think McCall is wired like he can go into the NBA, if he has the requisite confidence and he can play a specific role, he can defend and he can shoot threes and he can attack closeout situationally. And I think he's fine doing that. You find a lot of guys in college that have bigger roles. They have, you know, high usage scoring roles that can't translate to the NBA game. I don't see that as being a problem for him. It's just more about the assertiveness and like the mental confidence to actually like go on the court and not like freeze in the moment.
And now a word from today's sponsor, GlassesUSA.com. It's still uncharacteristically cold here in the Pacific Northwest for early March, with snow even on the forecast this week. And if you've been to Seattle, you know that most people can't drive in such a climate. But boating season is right around the corner for me, which means it's almost time to restock on sunglasses. Personally, I'm a big Ray-Bans guy. GlassesUSA.com is the most affordable way to purchase quality glasses, including Ray-Bans, of course, online. GlassesUSA.com offers quality prescription glasses at affordable prices that save the customer up to 70% off retail prices. It's a risk-free shopping experience, guys. Free shipping and returns, 365-day 100% warranty, full money-back guarantee. There's also a huge selection of over 2,500 main-style brands from Ray-Ban, Oakley, Tom Ford, Calvin Klein, to Michael Kors. You can select from a variety of frame styles from full-rim to half-rim, as well as prescription or non-prescription glasses. GlassesUSA.com online also has cool features like the virtual mirror, where you can upload any picture from Facebook and see how the glasses look on you. GlassesUSA.com supports the What's on Draft podcast and helps keep the podcast free to listeners. But right now, it's offering a special promo code. If you enter Almighty at checkout, you can get 55% off any glasses you choose. It's an incredible deal, guys. Again, Almighty at checkout, 55% off any glasses. GlassesUSA.com, the most affordable way to purchase quality glasses online. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys want to move towards Bruce Brown, a guy that we haven't talked about at all, but like, at least I think after these guys we have mentioned, like, I don't know if Monk will be there for you, Mark, or not, but like the Milikinas, Bridges of the World and all that, I think he could be the next guy in line. I think at least I have him, and I think we all talked about this before, and you guys have him too, ahead of Donovan Mitchell in terms of upside. And I think he's a guy we haven't really touched upon, because I didn't know much about him before the college season, and being a freshman that is going to be 21 before his rookie season at the NBA level, if he declares this year, I kind of was writing him off a little bit. And then I watched some games of Miami and went down a little bit on the advanced numbers, and he's much more impressive than I thought as a playmaker, even though he's a bit rough around the edges in terms of his handle or his ability to break down plays and all that. But like, he's shooting really well from the three-point line in really a good number of attempts for where I thought he was as a shooter. And then he has all that ability of a lockdown defender and the physical attributes that you don't see in terms of size or even some type of strength level with a Donovan Mitchell. So I don't know how high you conceive he can go or how high you are on him, considering he's going to be 21, I think, by the draft time or just
September.
Right after, I think, during the summer.
Or late August, one of the two.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, what impresses me the most... what impresses me the most is that 25% of his finishing possessions are as the pick and roll ball handler. Like, he's not like really adept. He's over the 50th percentile, but that's just impressive to me because that matches the eye test. Like the first game we saw against Duke, the first play or whatever, he drives it in. Yeah, it was fantastic. The body control at the rim. He has a little bit of that playmaking, and I think he has enough to be like a legitimate secondary handler, which is what I would differentiate him from, like, a Donovan Mitchell, who's more, you want Donovan more in like a catch and shoot role with very situational handling.
Yeah.
Brown's kind of like, he has the ability to come off a screen, read the floor. He's adept hitting the dive man, especially on slip cuts like we saw against Duke. And that's just a really valuable package because this guy is somebody that's shooting 15 of 27 on unguarded shots in the half court. Like, he can make open shots. It's just, he can't shoot off the dribble. He's 4 of 33 off the dribble. So, there are like positives and negatives. He's not Josh Hart as far as like a secondary.
He's a better defender.
He's more athletic, of course, but he's not as adept. He is a better defender, but he's not as adept as a playmaker. So it's like you kind of take the good with the bad. I'm still high on him. I don't know if you guys saw the Virginia Tech game, but that was another great one. His off ball D was fantastic. So good at digging down, really good positionally. It's just like, can he shoot off the dribble consistently? If he gives you that, then like he's really something.
I think they're playing him at the one a bit too much also in Miami. Like, I don't know if he was coming this year with that in mind because he seems a little bit undecisive at times, especially shooting off the dribble. Like, he doesn't have the timing right, I would say. Like, he's elevating when he has not the space or he's not creating the space at times. Even if he has the tools athletically, I think, it's like he doesn't have the ball skills yet to be able to stop in a dime and just creating that type of elevation out of that type of setting. I think he could get there if he gets a bit more poised, but also the age is against him as well, so it's just a bit tricky with him.
Well, that was something that really surprised me when I tuned into Bruce Brown for the first time. He's a 6'5 guy with a 6'9 wingspan, whose statistical profile is that of a 3-and-D wing secondary handler type of guy. And the first time I tuned in to watch him, he was basically playing on ball as the point guard for the whole game. Which was surprising to me, and it was I took as a positive that he's clearly being asked to do more than he's capable of doing, and he's like shouldering that burden pretty effectively. He's not been hugely efficient this year, but since his shot started going down in ACC play, he's been better than you would expect of someone who is not a point guard and doesn't really have point guard skills. And I think that speaks, as basically exactly as Cole was saying, like it speaks positively to what he might be able to do at the next level. And it's more encouraging than Donovan Mitchell. To me, like those two guys are the exact like apples to apples comparison. Where you have to pick Bruce Brown if you're going to pick one of the two, because he's ahead as a handler, as a ball handler. He's ahead as a passer and vision wise. He's bigger. He's longer. He's going to have an easier time guarding up positions than Mitchell's going to have. Yeah. They're both bulldogs. They're both like very, very aggressive players.
Yeah, I think Mitchell might be a bit of a better shooter, but like that's not enough to move it towards.
But I mean, maybe we've got now 2 months of evidence in Mitchell's entire career that he can shoot.
Like, that's for sure. Yeah.
We're guessing on both of them as far as the shot is concerned.
Least Brown has the numbers in terms of non-assisted makes at the rim. His percentage is not super high or anything, but he has 60%, which is not awful considering that he's creating his own look a ton at the rim and he's shooting half his shots at the rim as well. And like by far the guy that has more field goal attempts at the rim for Miami. So like I think he's shown enough, especially going downhill and especially playing in transition on ball. I think there as well as any young guard. Like, they are much better in terms of creating explosive plays and creating space if they have that type of transition moment and situation where they can just blow by guys. I think he's good. I'm much better there than others. But like, it's just how much you can play around his ceiling, right? Like, how much you can kind of, if he gets a bit more polished, if he gets a bit better in terms of a jump shoot and like evolving his form, how much you can think he can be at the next level. But even if he doesn't develop that much, I think the profile is there as well.
Yeah, he's already shooting pretty well off the catch, and I don't really like his mechanics all that much. Like, he's got a longer release, and he doesn't really have that Donovan Mitchell preparatory footwork, so he doesn't like hop into shots. So I think there's definitely like...
He's not as compact either.
Yeah, like Donovan Mitchell shoots a pretty nice ball off the catch, and I think Brown has improvement level there, and I'd like to see that, because like you guys have been saying, the rest of it, I think he kind of trumps Mitchell. I think they're pretty equal on defense. Brown can play down, and he has a little bit more versatility. Doesn't have quite Mitchell's intensity. He gets burnt a little bit. Like, he got beat in the Virginia Tech game pretty bad on ball just because he reached and he didn't move his feet. I think he's gotten beat a couple times by Kennard in that game too. So I don't see him as like really quick twitch laterally. I don't think he's like a super, super athlete that way. But he's really good positionally. He's really good with angles, and he has the length. So like, where I see his impact most is kind of off ball. Is like an off ball defender. He's really good on closeouts, really good at digging down, good at rotations. He's good positionally. So that's kind of how I see him, is like not being like necessarily like a point of attack, like dynamic point of attack defender, but maybe just like one that defends well in the team construct.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to quickly just push back, Javier, like 21's not that old. Like,
no, I know. Yeah.
It's old for a freshman, but like, as far as drafted guys are concerned, like, there are 21-year-old rookies all the time. Like, he's got plenty of room to develop. And like, he's 6 months older than Josh Jackson, but like, he's this season is basically like, look at it as his sophomore season, and that's a perfectly reasonable way of looking at it.
No, that's for sure, and you will want to see him being a developed guy, and I think he's developed enough in terms of according to his age, and like, he's the same age as Sabas Muhammad was as a freshman. And Muhammad has turned out okay. Like, I know he's not like the perfect prospect, and he's not as a guy that might be more than a specialist, but that you could see that when you watch him at UCLA, and had nothing to do with his age. He was more of the type of athlete he was. So if you believe in Brown athletically, or you believe in his ability to improve, I think the age is not as important. You are right there, Mark. And also, like, we're talking about apples to apples comparison. Like, he's the same age roughly as Donovan Mitchell. So it's not like much of a problem.
Right,
there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's also,
that's why that's like, Such an obvious point of comparison to me, is because like, they have so much in common, and they are like a very, very similar age, that it's that's the one, like, if you have to pick one 3-and-D guy over another out of this group of guys, that's the only like obvious one to me, is those two. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, like, I think the finishing is really, like, statistically that's the big thing, and on film you can see it too. Like, I think Brown's body control around the rim is much better. Much better using both hands. I don't think Mitchell's that good in traffic finishing, and his 2-point percentage is really poor. Like, it's one, like, there's been a lot of stat studies done, and that's like, for shooting guards, he has 5 out of the 6 like overarching categories, and 2-point percentage is the one he's lacking in. And so I think it's a definite problem. And Brown definitely has that.
Oh yeah, that's the 538 study, right? You wanna quickly just talk about that for the listeners in case they haven't seen it, because that was a really I don't know that it was. I think it's best for eliminating, determining who is worth looking at and who is not, rather than like actually figuring out. But why don't you tell our listeners what it is, and it's certainly a worthwhile thought exercise. At the very least.
Basically, it just points 6 different categories per position. So for guards, it would be like points per 40 pace adjusted. Rebounds, assists to turnover ratio, and then certain benchmarks for 3-point percentage, 2-point percentage. So you really look at all those, you conglomerate, and there's certain benchmarks that like that are found over time, the minimum benchmark required for like a good prospect is. So for instance, I think 3-point percentage is 30%. So for a guy like De'Aaron Fox, who's 19%, that's a huge red flag. 2-point percentage, I don't remember what the actual baseline was, but Donovan Mitchell is under it, and that's the only one that he doesn't satisfy. So like Mark said, I think it's best used as like maybe as an initial filter to really like zero in on guys that, okay, this guy you know, outlier poor 2-point percentage. That's a huge problem. But I don't think you should just take it like verbatim, and that's, you know, your entire analysis. Obviously, it's just one of the filters that you can use.
So here's the article. It actually came out last year, so June 23rd, 2016. It's by Neil Payne, who's one of 538's like very common sports writers, and it's literally just called "What to Look For in an NBA Draft Prospect," and he's interviewing Ed Whelan, who has these statistical benchmarks for prospects that he looks for. Counting Baskets on Twitter re-unearthed it within the last couple of weeks. So it's sort of front of mind for a bunch of us. And yeah, as Cole said, yeah, it is 50% from 2-point. I've pulled it up, Cole. It looks at these different positions and says, okay, what do you want out of them for a basically a baseline, right? What are the obvious flaws that are sticking out if you don't fulfill these couple of ideas?
If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-Dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
Yeah.
All right. Who else?
Yeah, like
anyone else in that area that, like, obviously we've talked about Josh Hart a lot. He's in there for me. I don't know what to do with him really. At least not versus these other guys. Do you have anyone else there?
He's another guy I didn't bother as much because I don't think he's going to declare, but I guess Andrew Jones. Talk about a little bit could be a possibility there. I don't really know as much. He's another guy, I think he has a little bit more of a creation upside than any of these guys we talk about in terms of being a possibility on ball player. But like, I'm not really all that sold yet, and I would like to see more as well. He's just another guy that I'm iffy on, and I haven't, like, probably as Cole was saying with Mikal, it's another guy I haven't looked as much into because I don't expect him to declare. I think Hart is an interesting one. I won't be opposed at all against having him that type of height in draft.
I like the USC kid, Melton, but I don't think he's going to declare either. I just like him instinctually. He's kind of like a 3D+ kind of guard, somebody that I looked at. But really, for me, like, I didn't talk a lot about Miles Bridges, but just to bring a couple things up versus Wisconsin, because I really think that's really valuable film if you want to see Miles. Because you really see him guard Hayes in the post, and he kind of has to bang with him the entire game. And Hayes isn't like an NBAer, really, but he's really physical in the post, and he makes you work. So you really see him playing the four. You know, he stoned him a couple times in the post. And then what Javier touched on earlier, the playmaking four game. Like, this guy is somebody that can run a pick and roll, like, kind of, like, hesitate and actually throw lob passes and stuff. And, you know, the shooting, the confidence has been ridiculous. And, like, I haven't seen a bad miss from him in a while. Like, this guy pulls up off the dribble, pick and pops, you know, a bunch of different things. He's coming down off pin down screens. So when I look at him, it's like he can float in and out of games defensively off ball, but he's going to play, if he's willing to play down a position, which is what teams should really interview him and ask him, like, are you willing to play the four? Do you want to grind? Because he can rebound for that position. He can box out. Like, he's pretty diligent about that now. So I think that for that consideration at seven and kind of just tying that up for me, I would definitely have him right there with Ntilikina right now and probably just ahead of Monk.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy, at least in terms of his shooting. I mean, if you go back to his statistics at high school level, I know those ones don't matter as much, but like, he was attempting many more three-point shooting through his career and with better percentages than guys like Winslow or stuff like that. So at least you think he could be a bit better even if the free throw is not there. But like, you were talking about the confidence and like how easy he shoots out there, and I think the numbers are backing it up. I think he's going to be viable, especially as a four there, and he has the physicality to battle against bigger guys, so I'm not as worried there. You are going to lose some, but you're going to gain some, hopefully, on the offensive end, so I think he's definitely up there. We are not mentioning any bigs at all, right? Like, that's part of this discussion. We had this podcast last week talking about the bigs. I don't know which one is the closest for you, Mark. You didn't have the opportunity to talk about it last week, and I know you are not all that high in the big class, but if you had to pick one, it would be whom if you can make your talk yourself into having a guy in the lottery somehow.
Yeah, I don't have any bigs in the top 10, which I don't think differs from you guys. I think Zach Collins is probably my favorite. I'm buying the idea of a shot from him enough that he's intriguing. He rebounds like I can't swear. He rebounds really well. he's like an awesome rebounder. And the defense in space and protecting the rim is just encouraging enough so that I would bet on it to supplement the offense effectively. And he's sort of the only guy that I'm like, yeah, he can be a starting center. So
I think we agreed on that last week. I know that we had some problems with Collins in terms of playmaking ability or even like ability to read the floor, but like he doesn't get that opportunity at Gonzaga either. So I don't know how fair is to judge him for his shortcomings there. And also, like you were talking about like the defense, I think a big plus for him is like he shows physicality at least, and that's a big thing to search when you're looking at bigs. And like you won't see that with guys like Kaminsky or guys that can pick and pop. Whereas with Collins, at least you see him like he does go at the rim against guys, and he doesn't mind boxing out, and he doesn't mind being physical against perimeter guys. So I think that's a big plus for him translating there. And like we were talking about it, and it was a bit lame to come up with a why comparison and all that, but like I think he does look a little bit out there like a Cody Seller that may be able to shoot the ball from the perimeter, and that's a valuable player. Like Cody Seller has been a big part of the Hornets that have been completely clueless without him in the rotation just because of the athleticism he brings to the table. So yeah, I think he's a guy that is the closest for me, and I think he could be potentially in the late lottery range, but it's just difficult to come up with more names for the big class.
Yeah, I'd buy him more, I guess, if he could pass. And I would really I want to believe in Robert Williams a lot because he's like the only guy I really trust to protect the rim.
He can pass.
Yeah, and he can pass too. Like he has everything. Yeah. I just don't trust his shot. Like we talked about this off air. Like I've just been looking at shooters like historically, and the big man shooters that have like easy set shots that shoot an easy ball, little input. Like those guys, like those are the guys that thrive. And with Williams, there's just too much input. Like he doesn't shoot the same elevation every time. There's too much that goes into it. And I have really big issues if that's gonna like translate to the 3-point line. And he can be like a pick and roll kind of dive, like legitimate explosive finisher, but how much is that worth? Especially if you don't do big man things like box out diligently, set good screens. Like there's a lot of things to be left on. He leaves a lot of things on the table for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Williams is my second big as well, but I share the same concerns that you do. I also like, I tend to be one of those guys who places less of a premium on, size benchmarks basically. Or especially on guys who look skinnier before they get to the league, because like my thinking is they are gonna get bigger. Like everyone bulks up as they go through their NBA career. Williams is small, and to the point where I'm at least a little bit worried about it in the NBA. Like he's definitely long, and he's long enough to be a rim protector, and he's shown that. Whether he has the instincts is another question, as you said. But just in terms of like banging and rebounding and like pick setting and dealing with like the Steven Adamses, the Joel Embiids of the world, like he's gonna get crushed by some of these guys, and that matters in terms of his being a like night in, night out starting center versus a situational backup. Like rim protecting dive man.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, we talked about that last week. Like that's how, yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, coach is really going to trust him to anchor a defense. Javier and I talked about this last week. Like he's much more likely to like play the four initially. And then you kind of lose a huge element of his game. Cause then he's just not going to like attack closeouts off the dribble and do a bunch of stuff, even though he had a baseline drive yesterday, but it's not like, it's not there. He's not that fluid with the ball, and he can't like space consistently. So what do you really do with that?
Yeah. You guys have anyone else there? I think we are all selling Lowry stock, right? So none of us are there on him.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to come up with those numbers that you saw the other day for us, Mark, in terms of your comparisons for him, in terms of if like used to settle down, that he's probably a guy that is not going. I mean, enough to say that you are taking away that he's not a guy that is a can miss prospect in terms of even with his historical good shooting for a freshman. Like, I think those names or those type of comparison statistically bring enough for me to just be able to pass on him at this stage and not be burned by him later on, I would say.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, we can cover this more in depth later, but I basically passed through a bunch of filters on my statistical database based on different prospects' playing styles and was trying to just figure out, and again, I only go back to 2010, so this is not comprehensive by any means, but I was just trying to figure out prospects who share similar statistical profiles to them in terms of playing style. And Lowry's comps were not super encouraging. It was basically Nikola Mirotić was about as positive as it got. We had, and Lowry was definitely the best shooter of the guys that he was grouped with, but it still was not encouraging given the bad defense, the bad passing, the low basketball IQ. So it was like Nikola Mirotić, Derek Williams, Trey Lyles, which depending on how you feel about Lyles could be a positive outcome, but like Lyles was way ahead in terms of feel and passing and IQ. And then Ben Bentil, who's just a disaster and was a disaster as a prospect. And the Celtics' very famous pick, Gershon Yabusele, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are his comps. Those are his statistical comps, at least recently, which is just not a super encouraging group of guys. I got nothing else. Cole, do you have anything else? Anyone else you are seeing here? Anyone you're in on? Any thoughts on Lowry?
Lowry, pretty much the only way we're going to miss on him if he has any kind of Dirk equity. That's really that. Or Kevin Love, if you're a really influential player like that, and he just hasn't shown any of that besides shooting the ball off the dribble, some high degree of difficulty shots, but he hasn't shown that self-creation. So yeah, I'm not worried about him. It's just not, he might be a top five guy to some people just because of the big man shooting. And I get the argument. That's just not how I want to build my team.
Yeah, that's important for me too. Like, you're losing too much with playing him at the four, and you are not going to be able to live with him at the five. We'll talk about this on and on. It's just like not there for me either.
I guess one more point on Lowry, which I mean is just building off of what you just said, Javier. But like the idea of playing a bigger player, like the advantage of playing a 7-footer like Lowry Markkanen is that you are increasing your rebounding and your defensive capabilities. Like in a league based around skill, I mean even before it was entirely based around skill, like as completely as it is now, but the payoff for playing big guys is that you can expect better rebounding and better defense. And Lowry doesn't do either of those things. So if you're not getting those things from him, why not just play some guy who does either of them or both and who can shoot maybe not quite as well as he can, but like 80% of it? And there's just so little positive because you're giving up the only advantages you gain from playing big by having him out there, that I just don't see it. Yeah. Anyway, cool. I'm good, guys. I feel like we've reached a good spot. I'd love to keep this a little on the shorter end for once. any more thoughts? Anything else you want to quickly go over? Yeah.
Don't draft a big in this class, like high equity. Wait until next year when there are actually good bigs like DeAndre Ayton, Wendell Carter, Mo Bamba. These guys are actually like legit players, we think. I mean, I think Ayton is for sure, and Carter has shown me a lot in person. But like, you don't want to spend equity in this class in the top 10 chasing Justin Pattons and, you know, Lowry Markkanens or whatnot. Just wait until next year. That's my closing thought.
Very, very similar to last year with point guards, right? Like,
Yes.
Don't shoot on Chris Dunn just because it's a draft and like you're looking for point guard. Like wait till 2016. Like
yeah, that's a good line, yeah.
2017. For whatever.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Point taken.
No, I mean yeah. Building on that, it's just like I think even wait for the second round. I think like some guys that are going to get drafted, we talked about this last week, it's just like the value is not there if you're drafting them way early, and you can just probably find a similar backup big somewhere early in the second or even middle second. Like that's the point of line for me, like just differentiating well enough those different spots and differentiating where the value is coming from the draft. Like you have to take that seriously and take the draft as a whole and try to divide those points. And like Cole was talking about before, it's a bit terrifying the thought that we're downplaying the bigs. And we are that close to 3-4 guys, 5 guys non-declaring to have like 3 or 2 of those guys in the lotto somehow. Like just, like the depth of the draft high earlier on in the lottery is a bit underwhelming for me. And it has been for the last month or so.
Cool.
Definitely. You guys have anything to plug?
Yeah.
No. Not really.
I haven't written.
Well, I got one thing. If you want to read about Isaac and Tatum's matchups this year, visit the Step Back. And you can read that on Fansided. And please, if you guys can, give us a rating on iTunes as long as it's good. And whatever feedback you guys have, hit us up on Twitter at What's On Draft Pod. We're really receptive to that. So we'll answer all questions and we'll answer questions on it too. So thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And hit us with questions because we'll probably do another mailbag down the road. So that's always good to have.
Thanks very much, everyone. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye. Napa Know
How. Napa Guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-Dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.